Well, 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 if life is a game of chance, let us see if William White Cloud can help us, well, tip the odds in our favor. We're going to come back with William White Cloud. As I said before, if you haven't done it already, make yourself a proper cup of tea and strap in. Well, you don't have to strap in. You can keep your seatbelt loose because this is going to be a very mellow journey to enlightenment and perhaps even a little illumination on Coast to Coast AM. John B. Wells and you widen riding the electromagnetic wave into, I don't know, our delivery systems are what, AM, FM, XM, internet. Our management is in deep space. Welcome to the bridge, William White Cloud. It's a pleasure to have you with us tonight.
Thank you, John. Great to be with you. Great to hear your voice again.
It was very nice meeting you in Austin, and it was great to meet the man behind the book that I read. Well, I guess I must have read it in maybe 08, possibly 09, but I read it, and then I read it again, and I liked it a lot, The Magician's Way.
Thank you.
So, if life is just a game of chance, you know, that's a sort of a friendly cliche. Oh, well, something good may happen. Start us off wherever you like and just tell us how to, first of all, tell us about you. Tell us how you got into the work that you're in now and what led you to write The Magician's Way, and just take it from there.
Okay. I think that's a really good place to start, actually.
Yeah, at the beginning. That's a good place to start.
At the beginning, yeah. Well, how I got into magic, as it were, and the work that I'm involved in, basically, is really an interesting story. A really interesting story, if I say so myself. I had a long-term illness, would have lasted about 10 years, and was a slow downhill descent. It had its ups and downs, and it wasn't just all in one direction. But basically, over a long period of time, I just went downhill physically, mentally, and I was just really ill. And though I tried, and though the medical profession and the alternative medical industry tried to help me, no one could determine what was wrong with me, and no one could help me. And I ended up in a very bad way. You know, I was really literally on my deathbed in the end. And on the way down as well, it was such a terrible experience that I also self-medicated on different things, different substances, alcohol and drugs. And so as a secondary effect of that, developed substance abuse problems. And very obviously, because I couldn't work, my finances suffered, my marriage broke up, and as I say, I just ended up in a really bad place. And the thing that I remember about it, being at rock bottom, and what really, to myself, describes my experience, and the pain I was in, and the low that I'd hit, the thing that describes that most powerfully is the fact that I just had no mental faculty left. I had no memory. I just forget everything. And even on the days that I was able to have the strength to take a walk outside, I remember I used to have to carry a note with me that on that note was written my name, who I was, and where I lived, in case I just lost it and just didn't know, as did happen, where I just wouldn't know where I was and who I was, or what I was doing. And, I'd give the note to a stranger, and on several occasions I'd be taken home by total strangers. And that's the shape I was in at the end, in this really bad way. And I had tried everything. In the end, I'd been to professors of universities. I wasn't even dealing with doctors anymore. I was dealing with endocrinologists in universities, and no one knew what was wrong with me. No one could help me. And one day, I met a man who I got talking to, and he was a very robust, healthy-looking guy, the polar opposite of what I looked like and the shape I was in. And we got talking, and the conversation quickly turned to my condition. And surprise, surprise, this man claimed to know exactly what was wrong with me, because he claimed he had had the very same condition himself. And in his telling of his experience, I could really relate to him, and I really knew that he definitely, from what I could tell, must have had the same condition, and therefore I was very susceptible to what he told me after that, and the cure he proposed. And he just very bluntly said to me, "Look, they're gonna kill you. You're gonna die, and everything that everybody's suggesting to you, they don't know what's wrong with you, but they're proposing all kinds of cures, and you're under all kinds of treatments, and you're on all kinds of diets, and that's just all gonna kill you. You've got to do what I'm gonna tell you now, and it's a very simple cure, and it's gonna fix you up right away, and you've got to start eating red meat, and you've got to start drinking coffee, have some wine with your meals, and have a couple of cigarettes every day." And
oh man, is this ever going to go crossways with some of the audience members?
Well, I understand that, because everything the guy told me was complete anathema to everything I had been told. All the conventional wisdom was that what he was prescribing was exactly, most of all, what I should absolutely avoid. And he said to me, "Look, I know that you must probably on Chinese medicine now. You're taking vitamin supplements, all of that. So just stop that and just do what I've told you." Actually, also prescribed a walk every day. And anyway, I was just so desperate, and not only desperate, I was just so sick of my condition, and living under the deprivation, and starving myself of any pleasures, and it actually appealed to me. It was in a way threatening to me, but at the same time, had a great appeal. And also, I was going to try anything. But particularly, you've got to remember that this guy could relate to me, and I could relate to him. So it had enormous resonance with me. And whatever the case, I followed his prescription, and I did do that. I did start eating meat every day, and I started having a couple of cigarettes every day, and a few glasses of wine, and a few cups of coffee, and I just bounced back immediately. I would have thought, and I've seen this with other people that have been long-term ill, is that if there is a cure found for them, if they do recover, it can be almost an equally long trajectory up, a long way up as it took them to go downhill. And I always imagined that if hope against all hope, a cure would be found for me, if I could somehow be saved, that sure, I'll be saved, but it would definitely be a long road back to health. But I actually bounced back to health very quickly. My mental faculties were restored very quickly. My energies came back, and my ability to build up my strength and get about, and was actually shocking to myself and to those that knew me. And after 10 years of this downhill slide, I came back within days, and then certainly within weeks and months, I was restored to my original health. And so, I think there are many things I could have taken from that. There are a lot of things that I could have assumed from that experience, and I'm sure you can appreciate. It was a profound experience, a very profound life experience.
Well, I can imagine that it was. Now, So they never did diagnose correctly your illness?
Never.
And do you think that this illness was caused from within?
Oh, definitely. I today really believe that I know what caused it. I mean, it was an illness of the spirit, really. There's no other way, because later in healing, it wasn't as though I could have sustained that healing, because I actually could have gone downhill. And then, you know, there were some troughs after that, and there were some specific things that I had to do to pull myself out of those troughs, and, you know, just keep improving and keep growing within myself and keep myself really healthy by actually keeping my spirit healthy. And that was really the key to it. To sustain it required that I keep my inner self healthy.
So actually the old joke about the guy going to his doctor and the doctor says, well, you're in pretty good shape for your age. We shared this joke. I'll share it with the audience. He didn't like it. Pretty good for my age. What do you mean? Well, do you think I'll make it to 80? He said, well, do you drink? He goes, well, maybe a glass of wine occasionally with a meal. Says, well, do you smoke? Oh, no, my last doctor told me to quit smoking. Well, what about red meat? No, I was told that was bad for you. Well, what about your nightlife? I mean, do you keep any late hours? No, I read a lot. What about sex? Oh, my wife and I are together, you know, two or three times a month. He goes, then why do you care if you live until you're 80? So there's truth in the joke. I love it.
There's real truth in the joke.
Well, you know, there are a lot of old people out there. They've made it up into their 90s and into their, you know, hundreds, and they had bacon with every meal and cigarettes and whiskey and all of that stuff. Now, we're not suggesting anybody, like, take up smoking, but there is something about repressing. My martial arts master, I asked him, what about the smoking thing? And he said, look, stress is the number one killer. I will not pretend to do master's accent, but he said, smoking a number one a killer. So if you smoke a cigarette and it relieves the stress and you can tolerate it physically, why worry about it? So maybe that applies to everything.
I think it does. You know, that you can't make really hard and fast rules about anything, and just have such a live your way in such a rule orientated way. You know, where you just got, you know, rules for everything and strict rules for diets and strict, you know, but basically what I'm talking about is controlling yourself, and you know what I've found is really that no matter how much good people think they're doing, is when they actually try and control themselves very strictly, they're just really shutting their system down, and I think that's more unhealthy than anything. I think, you know, in some ways, you've got to be relaxed about everything, you know, and whether you subscribe to whatever kind of lifestyle accompanying that, you actually have to be relaxed, because otherwise you tighten up, you stress yourself, and the thing is that this whole experience that I've described really goes to something fundamental that I've learned about, and that is that we actually all have a natural ability beyond our rational mind and our logical ways of going about life, is we actually have what I'd call a spirit, is this natural ability that is perfectly capable of taking care of us in every sense, I believe, and in my experience, my own, and what I've seen in others since. That this part of ourselves can play a brilliant game of golf. It can attract love into our life. It can make us make really good financial decisions. It can guide us beautifully. It can lead to really great health. And the thing about our natural ability is that it's actually suppressed by, you know, strict notions of process and how things work. And it's when you set it free by focusing more on end results rather than how you're going to achieve those results so much, when you relax up a bit, you release this natural ability, and that's going to be your biggest ally in life. In determining your natural ability is going to be your biggest ally in determining whether you're going to play a great game of sports, or whether you're going to run a business really well, or have a great relationship with your family. And strict rules for having relationships, the diet and health or anything is no pun intended, but it's kind of like the kiss of death, really.
Well, I've noticed that a lot of the people who have concentrated so much on building their bodies and these strict dietary regimens, with some exceptions, you know, none of this is just generally applicable, but I noticed they really don't look as healthy as their physical and dietary regimens would suggest that they would. They don't. They look more stressed out than anybody I've ever seen, frankly.
Yeah, well, you know, it's true about kind of people's approach to everything. You know, John, with this illness that I had and the recovery from it, the mystery illness that I had, and the mystical recovery that I had from it, I was saying I could have drawn many conclusions about that, but for some reason, the conclusion that impacted on me, because as I was saying, it was just such a profound experience and just had an incredible impact on me. It blew me away. And the conclusion I came to that I drew from it was, wow, there's something about our focus that creates our reality. For 10 years, I'd been single-mindedly, obsessively focused on, you know, not being unwell, on not being sick, on not dying, and yet I just continually deteriorated no matter what happened. And the more I deteriorated, the more desperate I was to get better and well and, you know, control myself and my environment to help me be well and healthy. And not be in this place of suffering, this point of suffering. And yet, when I gave that focus away, when I gave that orientation away, and I just went to really, in truth, give myself a bit of pleasure, took my focus off survival. It at that point, it didn't matter to me anymore. I kind of rebelled against that focus. I gave that intense focus up, and you know, just really allowed myself some pleasure in my life, and some hope without control. Like, just, you know, I'm going to get better, or I hope to get better by just letting go of the way I've been and just trusting in this prescription this guy has given me. It was a complete change in orientation and focus, and it created a completely different result. And I got from that there must be something in how we focus that really is most fundamentally responsible for the way our lives pan out and the major things that happen in our lives and the conditions of our lives. And I've studied that now for 20 years, and I've really come to understand that.
Okay. Hold on. I want to hear what it is you've come to understand. We're going to take a hard break now. We have to, and we will be back with William Whitecloud, author of The Magician's Way, on Coast to Coast AM. Thanks, Russ. You know, some of the definitions of magic are the use of means believed to have supernatural power over natural forces, magic rites, or incantations. But in this particular case, it would be an extraordinary power or influence seemingly from a supernatural source. While we're talking with William Whitecloud, author of The Magician's Way, and the soon-to-be-released, if not released already, The Last Shaman, you can shoot an email to me at johnb, J-O-H-N, B as in Bravo, at coasttocoastam.com, and I will weave it into William, and he will address it. And we will return after a little two-minute stop and carry on in that manner. See if we can find our way, the magician's way, on Coast to Coast AM. John B. on the bridge with you tonight with our guest, William Whitecloud, author of The Magician's Way. And I was just reading an email from Jack. He said, doctor has been telling me for 20 years I'm going to die if I don't do what they say. He loosened himself from their influence. He's in better shape now than ever. I don't think the AMA is going to like this very much. And in fairness, of course, there have been extraordinary advances. But like everything else, let's make it bigger, stronger, faster, and everything. So I think it's somewhat widely known. Now, there's a self-canceling expression that people are over-medicated and over-surgeried and everything else. And recent, I mean, within recent memory, it's like, well, you know, the healing process really is improved if people have a good attitude. I remember it was a big deal when he started playing lovely music and laughter, you know, telling jokes and lightening up a little bit, went a long way to aid in the healing people who had life-threatening diseases. So maybe it's calling upon that supernatural power which is within, yes?
I think, John, I was saying before, the conclusions that I drew from my own illness and sort of miraculous recovery, you could say, is that there's our reality, if you like, if you want to put it this way, or I'll put it this way, is that your reality is created by your focus, and most fundamentally, if you tend to focus on the process too strongly, if you're desperate, or if you're controlling, if you're fanatically attached to the process, and that's where you're putting the emphasis, and that's where you're putting the power. To me, what that indicates is a lack of trust in your own self, in your own natural ability, in your own creative spirit, really, for want of a better word, to actually take care of the result. And it's as if it's a thought, really. It's a message that you're giving yourself. That you don't have the power, that the power's outside of you. And I really see that in my own case. And looking back, I see that that's what I did to myself. I'm not saying that the medical establishment, the alternative medical establishment, you know, don't have a very good place in life and in society. They do. And yet what I see for myself is that more and more I just gave away my own power. I just gave away my power to something outside of myself. And the more I gave my power away, the worse I became. And since then, the thing that I – there are all sorts of processes. I still go for acupuncture. I still attend physicians. I go to doctors about one thing and another. But what I've learned from that experience now is that no matter what my dealings, whether I'm going on radio or whether I'm going to a doctor, whether I'm making an investment decision, I'm moving over to America now, I'm moving my family over now, no matter what, I might have to put my hands myself in the hands of lawyers or accountants or whatever, but whatever I do, is not to put the power in the process. You know, they always say the devil's in the detail. And now I know what that means really for me, is that if I put more power in the authorities outside of myself, if I put the power in the process above just the fact of what is it I love, and the trust that I have the power, not necessarily by the means, you know, the mechanical means that are prescribed, but that it can happen in any way, conventionally or unconventionally, but that I have the power to attract the outcomes that I want, then that is going to create a much greater result than when I lose the power and give the power away, go back to a fear-based orientation and start clutching at straws and start, you know, falling back on the detail, on the process, on the reliance of process, the reliance of authorities outside of myself, is inevitably where now I see myself slipping. And I can look back to that 10-year nightmare that I went through. I can trace it back to exactly that, is that more and more I was always giving the power away and just reinforcing within myself that I didn't have the power to create what I wanted to create in my life. And in a sense, you know, just suppressing my creative spirit, my natural ability more and more and more.
How is this power taken back, William? You say you were giving it away, you were relinquishing your power. How does one take it back?
Wow. That's a really good question. I guess it's just the recognition, really, that we, you know, the first thing is really that you have to recognize that power is within you. And to answer your question, John, I've really just got to cut to the chase, really, and just basically state my core premise in life, and that is just simply, it just goes to the heart of magic, the heart of alchemy, whatever words you want to describe for spiritual empowerment, really. And it's this idea, this truth, I believe, is that we actually are born into an illusion. We're born, we're hypnotized from childbirth into a false orientation, and it's an orientation based on conditioning, based on resolving our circumstances, perceptions of survival issues. And basically, it's ultimately a perception that we don't have the power, that we aren't powerful. We just really forget who we are and the power that we have within us. And you know, then this doesn't really allow us to grow in life in a healthy way, be free, have our full passion and have sovereignty in our lives. And the thing is that it's what is available to us is to rise above this orientation and recognize that we are powerful beings, that we do have a natural ability, that we do have a creative spirit. And, you know, how do we turn this lead, as the alchemist called it, into gold? How do we take our power back? And that's why I said it's a really good question. And I think the answer to that is really just simply the process that I'm aware of is, you know, some people would say that you have to have belief and you've got to think positively. But I think I know a much more practical way, and it's actually just to begin practicing and establishing a practice of engaging your natural ability, your creative spirit. And so that by engaging that natural ability, by engaging the creative spirit, by engaging your own power, you begin developing awareness of it and confidence in it. And just simply the best way to do that I know of, which, you know, I cover extensively, as you'd be aware, in my book, The Magician's Way, is to just begin not as a belief, but as a premise, as a almost like scientists do. They work with a working assumption about how things work, and they conduct their experiments accordingly. And we can do the same. We can establish premises, and this is what I encourage people to do, is just begin assuming some premises in your life, and the first premise to assume, the central premise really to assume or to understand, is that our creative spirit is engaged by the question, what? Typically, we're very process orientated, and whenever we think about something we'd like and we'd like to go for, or our approach to anything, we very quickly become involved in the process. And through that, actually, often become aware of our beliefs in the sense that we don't believe we can have it. We can't see the way to having it. We talk ourselves out of it. We cut down on the vision. But a really good practice to develop is just to have the ability to unconditionally understand or just know and admit to yourself what it is you want, so that whether you believe it's possible or not, you're communicating messages to yourself subconsciously that this is the what, the end result. This is what I want, not how I'm supposed to get it, anything like that, but this is what I want. And at the same time, allow that desire, that love of that end result, that passion for that end result to exist, to develop a practice of engendering that, of letting that vision, of letting your dreams, of letting your visions live so that they exist there and that are not suppressed. And that very function over time actually engages your creative spirit, so that resources begin being attracted, ideas begin occurring to you. In other words, by letting those end results exist without killing them by overthinking them, by trying to work it out, understand them too much, by just letting them exist and allowing dreams and visions and end results to exist untampered, unconsciously, subconsciously, a pathway begins being woven. Connections begin. I mean, that's a definition of creativity almost, I think, the establishment of connection between things. And so ways begin opening up. Synchronicities begin attracting themselves to you. Resources begin attracting themselves to you. You actually do start to experience a sense of magic. And it all starts with relaxing, allowing yourself to acknowledge what it is you really want without dismissing it. And suddenly the spirit does come to the fore. I can assure you that I have a vast experience of it in my own life ever since. And I've been learning about it and practicing it ever since I had this major breakthrough way back when I recovered from this mysterious illness. And I've watched it happen with countless people that I'm friends with, that I coach, that I teach, is that the magic begins introducing itself to you, and it becomes a conscious awareness, a conscious realization. And you do begin realizing that there is a power within you. It's not a positive thought. It's not a wishful thought. It's not a belief. It's a tangible, concrete reality that begins taking shape in your life that then encourages you and compels you to learn more and advance more down this path. And it is the path of your power. And, you know, it doesn't have to take a long time, but I don't think that you're going to find it's an instantaneous thing. It's a learning curve. It's a learning orientation. But, you know, it's the way to start. And once started, I find there are very few people who will ever look back and will ever want it any other way, if that makes sense.
Well, it does. Now, do you reach within or do you reach for something external? I mean, because it sounds to me that this has nothing to do with anyone's, I'm just making up expressions on the fly here, but whatever one's religious orientation might be, does not seem to have anything to do with this. So this is not like, some of the shamans burn saffron, and there are various other things that are employed in trying to conjure a magical response on an external basis. So when you speak of this, developing or recovering your power, do you seek it within yourself, or do you reach out to an external higher power to bring it to you?
Oh, I do see what you mean. And I also do want to engage with something that you said there and confirm that this is not in contradiction of any faith or religion. It is outside of faith or religion, just in the same way I would say that gravity is in the outside of the domain of religion. It's not in contradiction of any spiritual or religious belief. It's just a functional approach to life, just a functional way of approaching life in which we just use our faculties in the most powerful and effective way that we can. But now, to the question of is it an inner strength or is it an outer strength, or are you going in or are you going out, or are you reaching to a higher power? The thing about let's call it magic is that In this orientation, in this premise, it doesn't help to really try and understand whether it's inside of yourself or outside of yourself. It's almost like that's going to then just be another belief and process.
Excellent. Let's stop right there because it's going to be stopped for us. Hold your thought tightly because we all want to hear the rest of it. We're talking with William Whitecloud, author of The Magician's Way, on Coast to Coast AM. We shall return.